Hi, listeners, and welcome to the True Crime Weekly Podcast, a podcast that is based in San Diego and hosted by me, Alina Trujillo, and my producer, Jose Fernandez. This is a podcast where I will be bringing you stories of murders, infamous cases, and unsolved mysteries. And this week, I'm going to tell you about a serial killer that the FBI has said to be the most prolific serial killer in U.S. history. This is the story of Sam Little. Sam Little started living a life of crime at a young age. His first crime was in 1956 when he stole a bicycle. Sam ended up serving time at a juvenile detention facility named Boys Industrial School in Lancaster, Ohio. And that's where he ended up serving time for that crime. And from then on, his crimes grew worse. Sam had started to move around from state to state and got arrested for fraud, driving under the influence, assault, armed robbery, rape, among other crimes. Then, by 1975, he had gotten arrested over 25 times across 11 states.
25 times?
25 times. In total, he served 10 years from these various offenses and escaped two murder convictions before his 2014 conviction.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So Samuel Little was born Samuel McDowell on June 7th, 1940, in Reynolds, Georgia. Sam claims that his mother was a sex worker as a teenager, and when he was born, she abandoned him on the side of the dirt road, and later having to be raised in Lorain, Ohio by his grandmother. But authorities, however, actually believe that Sam's mother probably gave birth to him while she was in jail, leaving his grandmother to raise him. So his early life is kind of unknown, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Sam had attended Hawthorne Junior High School, where he had problems with discipline and achievement. Eventually, Sam would drop out of school and left home as a teenager in the 1950s. After leaving his grandmother's house, Sam would live a life of a drifter, going from city to city, state to state, making sure he wouldn't stay in one place for too long. And due to his drifting lifestyle and not staying for places for too long, Sam would lack a strong connection with people or any place for that matter. Eventually, the only recurring connection in his life was a longtime girlfriend named Jean. Sam met Aurelia Jean Dorsey in 1971 while in jail. According to police, Sam had been in jail because he had committed a robbery in Westlake. Jean was 30 years older than him, but because she had shown him loyalty, Sam wanted to be with her, and after they got out of jail, the two were inseparable from that point on. They moved across the country together, shoplifting and living a life of crime for 15 years. And to this day, it's not clear if Jean knew about Sam's killings. However, there is speculation that she must have known about them, since she was the one that would often clean his car, and that's where some of his killings took place. So Jean eventually died of a brain aneurysm in the mid to late 1980s.
First of all, how do you meet somebody in jail?
Oh, we'll get to that. In 1961, Sam got arrested and convicted for breaking into a furniture store in Lorain. He would serve 3 years for that crime, and then he would be released in 1964. But Sam wouldn't stay out of trouble for too long after his release. In 1966, he would get arrested again, but this time for assault and battery for beating a woman in Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, that escalated quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then on January 31st, 1970, Sam Little picks up his first murder victim.
Oh, okay.
33-year-old Mary Brosley. Sam met Mary at a bar on New Year's Eve, and he strangled her and dumped her body in the Everglades. Sam later returned to Cleveland a few months after murdering Mary. And on May 28th, he was arrested for robbery of a Clark gas station in Westlake. And while in prison in September, he was charged with sodomy and aggravated assault.
While in prison?
Mm-hmm.
So he was all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Like, remember, in terms of location, all over the place.
Remember, he was a drifter, and he made sure to not stay in one place for too long, okay?
Yeah, no kidding.
Unless he was obviously arrested. By December, the robbery case had made headlines. When the state's key witness, Sam Little's girlfriend, Lucy Madero, who was present at the time of the robbery, was forgotten by police, the courts, and prosecutors.
What do you mean forgotten? What does that mean?
Well, they left her in the county's decrepit 1930s era jail off Payne Avenue for almost 6 months without a case.
You're kidding.
So they just like threw her in this jail and then
they just left her there.
They, oops, sorry, we forgot.
Wow.
Yeah. So the jail was so run down that inmates can talk through holes in the walls and ceilings.
Really?
Yeah. So as Sam told the story later, his girlfriend at the time, Lucy, told a cellmate, and are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Told a cellmate named Aurelia Jean Dorsey that she intended to testify against Sam before the trial. Jean met with Sam and warned him about Lucy. Then Lucy testified against Sam when the case came to trial in March of 1972.
Mm-hmm.
And since Sam had already been tipped off by Jean about Lucy, like her testifying against him,
right,
that Sam turned around and had Jean also testify in court on his behalf. And later the jury found Sam not guilty. Wow. So this is what I mean.
Turn it around.
Right. So this is what I mean by that was the loyalty that Sam saw in Jean that made him want to stay with her, even though she was 30 years older than Sam. And in Sam Little's own words, she was no beauty. But that was the loyalty that she showed him. So eventually Jean would teach Sam how to fend stolen goods, and Jean became Sam's traveling companion until she died in Los Angeles in 1988 of a brain hemorrhage.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that all started.
Yeah.
In jail that had the decrepit jail with holes everywhere.
Right. Mm-hmm. Rundown jail, and all because they forgot Sam Little's girlfriend. Like,
for 6 months.
Six. Can you imagine that? Oh my God, that's awful. Awful.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So in 1982, Sam was arrested in Pascagoula, Mississippi, and charged with the murder of a 22-year-old woman named Melinda Rose LaPree, who had gone missing in September of that year. Melinda had moved to Pascagoula, Mississippi, where it was said that her boyfriend had started to pimp her out. So one night she was seen leaving a bar by other sex workers.
Okay.
With a, and I quote, a smooth-talking black man with reddish-brown hair. That was a description that other sex workers had described the pair when they were getting into a brown station wagon with wood grain sides with Alabama plates.
Hmm.
Melinda's boyfriend had gone to the police station to report her missing. However, police officers wouldn't take the report serious since it was known that, you know, sex workers would often skip out on their pimps.
Hmm.
So, once again, let's...
So she's probably running... They think she just ran away from the pimp,
mm-hmm,
instead of actually being missing or something.
Right. So a month after her disappearance, her body was found in a cemetery. Her body was badly decomposed, that mm-hmm, no evidence was able to get recovered from the body. They couldn't even tell how she died.
Wow, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 6 weeks later, on November 24th, 1982, police pulled over a car that matched the description that was given to them. The man that they arrested was Sam McDowell, aka Sam Little.
No way, they actually arrested him?
Mm-hmm. This is how he was able to get away with so many crimes, by the way. because all of his arrests were filed under different names. There was Sam Little and Sam McDowell, which is what helped throw police officers, throw them off his scent in a way, okay?
Right.
So Sam McDowell is his grandparents' last name. Because remember,
oh,
he
I
was
see. Ra- so that's where
yeah,
he got that
he
from.
Was right.
I guess really back then, it was just a lot harder to do some sort of match like that.
You mean easier to get away with, like, oh, I'll use my grandparents' last name versus my parents'. Last.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Some type of alias, fake mm-hmm. ID or something.
Yeah. So a grand jury declined to indict Sam Little for the murder of LaPree due to the lack of evidence. So police officers had gone back to the two sex workers that had seen Melinda and that man leaving the bar that night.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed them a photo lineup and they both pointed to Sam Little's picture.
Really?
But police thought that they had everything they needed for the conviction. After all, they had the car, the body, and eyewitnesses, right?
Right.
But because the witnesses were sex workers, they felt like that didn't have enough evidence to convict Sam Little.
They didn't think it was going to be a legitimate or stand.
Right. The jury would not believe sex workers. Right. Just like how we see in many cases, which I won't go into that rant again. But, you know, like it's just... It doesn't matter. Like, they still...
You saw the crime.
Right.
And it matches. I mean, I guess if there's... Obviously, there's no... The DNA evidence wasn't a thing back then either, so...
However, police officers kept Sam in custody when they get a bulletin that had been sent to them from a sheriff's department in Florida. And Sam was transferred to Florida to be brought to trial for the murder of 26-year-old Patricia Ann Mount, whose body was found in September of 1982. Prosecution witnesses identified Sam Little in court as a person who spent time with Patricia on the night before her disappearance.
Really?
But due to the, once again, mistrust of witnesses' testimonies, aka sex workers or drug addicts, Sam Little was acquitted in January of 1984.
You gotta be kidding me.
Mm-mm.
He spent more time in jail over
the petty
stuff, right? Like breaking into a furniture store.
Now it's like they try to put him in jail for two murders, and it's like because sex workers were like the key witnesses, it would just
thrown out,
dismissed.
Yeah, it was incredible,
right? Which makes me so mad. Sam Little returns to Cleveland, Ohio after his acquittal. And while in Cleveland, Sam decides to, guess what?
Kill again.
Exactly. So on July 3rd, 1984, a body of an unknown woman was found at the bottom of an outside stairwell of a factory. The body was nude from the waist down. And based on the decomposition of the body, it seemed like the body had been there for months.
Months?
Months.
How was that?
I
was
guess
it abandoned?
It, yeah.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So police ran her fingerprints to see if there was a match to a missing persons report, but they didn't end up getting anything. So police officers had no idea what happened to this woman. They didn't even know if she was murdered or if she had jumped off the roof of the factory. But police officers thought that this was a murder due to how the body was found.
Oh, yeah. She didn't have any clothes. Like,
From the waist down, yeah. Right. And the cause of death for this Jane Doe was listed as undetermined.
Yeah, I mean, it was how many months, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they couldn't, once again, they couldn't determine
how she died. Yeah, decomposition, right.
So until 2 years later, in 1992, a new investigative tool led to a break in this case by using Jane Doe's fingerprints and running the fingerprints through a national fingerprint database. And after running the fingerprints through the National Fingerprint Database, that's when police officers got a name for Jane Doe. The name was Mary Jo Payton. So police officers, now knowing the victim's name, they tried to piece together the last whereabouts and who she had been with. But they weren't able to get any new information.
Oh yeah, the problem is that it happened a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, several weeks prior before they even started investigating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then in the 1980s, Sam Little moved to San Diego.
You're kidding.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And his next victim's name is Lori Barrows. Only this time, she isn't a victim.
What do you mean?
This time, Lori Barrows is a survivor.
Really?
Yep. She's this badass woman. But let me just tell you her story. On September 27th, 1984, Lori Barrows was a sex worker. And she had been doing this from time to time. And it wasn't often that she would work the streets. But then one night, Sam Little grabbed her from behind and threw her in his car. Sam drives Lori to a dirt road here in San Diego, and he throws her to the back seat of the car. He ties her hands behind her back. Then Sam begins to strangle her with his hands. As Lori fights for her life, his grip would get tighter and tighter around her neck.
Mm-hmm.
So Lori begins to lose consciousness. And whenever she would regain consciousness again, Sam would start to strangle her all over again. So this was all a game for Sam. He would strangle her just enough for her to lose consciousness, not to necessarily kill her,
mm-hmm.
but just enough for her to pass out. And then when she would wake up, he would tell her to swallow.
To swallow?
Yeah. Sam, and I quote, this is what Lori said. Sam would tell her, swallow. I like it when you swallow. So it's known that Sam, from a very young age, had become infatuated by women's necks. And his whole thing was, you know how men, they have the Adam's apple, and obviously it moves up and down.
Right.
So he loved seeing women's neck, how it would move when they would swallow. So that was his MO.
That is really
He would
weird.
Always strangle women with his own hands. He wouldn't use a rope, a belt, nothing. He wanted to feel that. And he, there's videos of him confessing to murders.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he would make it long and painful because he would choke women, masturbate, but he would choke them enough to make them pass out. They would come back and he would do it all over again.
Wow.
Yeah.
These poor victims.
Yeah. Sam began to strangle her again. And this time, when she lost consciousness, Lori says that she felt him pushing her out of the car. So Lori laid on the ground playing dead because she was scared that Sam was still there. For about half an hour later, when she finally decided to get up and start walking to look for a phone booth. So Lori ends up calling a friend from a phone booth and asks her friend to come pick her up because something had happened to her. After her friend picks her friend convinces her to alert authorities, and eventually Lori does. Lori ends up giving police officers a description of the attacker, the car, and the location of her attack. Which, here's a little fun fact for San Diegans.
Mm-hmm.
Or local listeners. So I saw this special on Sam Little on Oxygen.
Right.
And you want to know where this attack took place in San Diego?
No, where?
No, you don't want to know.
Fine, tell me.
You know where the Costco is at on off of Market Street?
Yeah, I know where that is.
There.
Really?
Obviously, the Costco isn't there, but that's, yeah. In that interview where they took her back to the scene of the crime. Yeah, you see, like, the Costco, and it's right there by, like, the street. I guess back then it was just a dirt road, like, where the cemetery is.
Yeah,
at.
It's right across the street from the cemetery. Yeah. Was the cemetery there back then?
I don't know.
Oh, I wonder. Can you imagine her, like, waiting 30 minutes, then walking to a phone booth?
She was terrified. She was terrified. She didn't know. Like, she was just plain dead. So she didn't even open her eyes because she thought, is he just waiting there?
Right.
You know? And then, I mean, after who knows how long he tortured her of, like, strangling her, lose consciousness, come back. And, you know, like, who knows how long he did that. So for her to just lay there. And then she just gets up and let me look for a phone booth, call my friend to come get me, like.
And then waiting around there at the phone booth. Like, well, you're out in the open, probably with a light hitting you. What if this guy drives by him? Like, oh.
I'm telling you, she's
terrifying.
A hero. On October 25th, 1984, rookie police officer Wayne Spees is out on patrol with his trainee slash partner when they decide to go back to where Lori had been attacked. And when they arrive at the scene where Lori had been attacked, they find that same car
really?
That matched the description that Lori had given them. And guess what? So police officers, it was, I guess, protocol back then where, like, they would, like, sneak up to whatever area they were going to go park in with, like, all the lights off. Everything was off. They see the car. And as soon as they spot the car, they're like, that's the car.
Mm-hmm.
They turn on their high beams. They turn on the sirens. And as soon as they put the high beams on the car and the sirens get turned on, guess what they see?
Don't tell me he's over there doing this again.
Sam Little is on top of another victim.
Wow.
So Sam Little gets arrested that night and police officers take him to the hospital because when he got out of the car, when he saw the cops happened to notice that he had scratches on his face going down to his neck. And Sam Little tried to say, oh, this is just me and my wife. We got into an argument. Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. Exactly. Nothing but they were like, no way. And again, cop crush, because for some reason, because this wasn't something that they did back in the 80s, but for some reason, they ended up taking Sam Little to the hospital to get blood drawn from him and to get his DNA.
Really?
Yes. And again, this is back in the 80s. They didn't do that.
That was probably not a protocol or thing.
Right. So, yeah. Cop crush. Sam was now facing two charges of attempted murder. District Attorney Gary Rempel starts to look at Sam Little's rap sheet. And he notices that Sam Little had 5 to 6 pages of charges. And then he realizes that he had gotten tried for 2 murders in Florida.
Yeah, that's not a big red flag, is it?
Exactly. So Gary Rempel decides to call the sheriff's department in Florida to find out more about these 2 murder cases. And while talking to the detective that had investigated the murders in Florida, he tells Gary how after Sam Little had gotten acquitted of the murder charges, Sam's defense attorney revealed that Sam had told them about 60 murders he had committed dating all the way back to 1983.
He confessed to that?
He had confessed to his attorneys when he was being tried for those 2 murders back in Florida, okay? But after he got acquitted, that's when he confessed. So, of course, this was very frustrating news for Gary Rempel. Obviously, because he couldn't take that to his trial because of the attorney-client privilege that he would not be able to use it against Sam in his case, you know? Right. So, obviously, that was extremely frustrating for him.
60.
And he can't do anything about it.
Make something up.
Right? So Gary Rempel ends up charging Sam Little with attempted murder, rape, assault with intent to commit, great bodily injury, and other related sexual charges. However, when the case went to trial, the jury wasn't so sure of the accusations. Sam said during his trial that both of the women had attacked him first. And it ended up becoming his word against theirs. And remember, once again, these 2 women were sex workers.
So
their word pretty much did not matter. Because of both of the women being sex workers, Gary knew it was going to be hard to get a jury to believe both of the women. So he was forced to offer Sam a deal. A deal that meant assault with intent to commit bodily injury, which is pretty much nothing. And of course, Sam takes the deal since he knew he was getting off with a light charge And he ended up getting 4 years.
Four?
4 years for the two cases.
Let's go back one more time. Mm-hmm. He got 3 years for breaking in to a furniture store. 3 years. He gets 4 years for almost murdering two people.
Mm-hmm. But they were sex workers. So it didn't matter. Isn't that frustrating? Like, no, how does it not matter? That's still a life. I don't care if that's a sex worker. That's somebody's daughter. That's somebody's niece. That's somebody's, you know, like, oh, it makes me so mad. You know, it's just, yeah, it's very frustrating. But then, in February of 1987, Sam Little gets released for good behavior. After only serving 2.5 years of his sentence.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, you know. So when he gets released from prison, Sam moves to Los Angeles. Then in September of 1989, Los Angeles police officer Jesse Soltero ends up responding to a possible homicide of a Hispanic female. Her name was Guadalupe Apodaca. Guadalupe had obvious strangulation marks around her neck. So, sound familiar?
Yeah, it sure does.
Yeah. So, police officers collect evidence from the crime scene and they clear the scene.
Okay.
Then, around the same time, a few blocks away from that crime scene, police officers had discovered another murder victim inside of a dumpster. And that killing had similarities of Guadalupe Apodaca's case.
That same day when they were doing the investigation, they found another body?
Around the same time. Mm-hmm. The body that was found in the dumpster was that of Audrey Nelson. But it had seemed like Audrey fought back, and she had used her fingernails to fight off her assailant. They collected the finger clippings, but once again, DNA testing was not something that was done back then. And both the cases of Guadalupe Apodaca and Audrey Nelson went cold.
But again, you know, them taking the finger clippings, I'm assuming that's was probably not a standard process, right?
It's not, but that's a big thing they did here. That's a good thing, okay?
Right. Absolutely.
Because it wasn't until 20 years later, 20 years later, when new DNA techniques allowed biological evidence collected from cold cases to be cross-checked against CODIS. And that's when they finally get a hit for the two murder cases of Guadalupe Apodaca and Audrey Nelson. So once again, DNA comes back 20 years later. It might have been lagging, but 20 years later comes back to kick ass.
That's awesome.
So LAPD start to run DNA from other cases that are similar of Guadalupe's and Audrey's. And that's when they get a third hit from a 1987 cold case. The DNA was found of the body of Carol Elford. Her body had been discovered about a mile from Guadalupe's body. And thanks to Lori Barrow's case and the police officers that had taken Sam Little to the hospital for that blood and DNA sample, came back to that of Sam Little. So they already had Sam's DNA because of Lori's case.
Right.
So in 2012, LAPD sought help from the FBI to try and find Sam Little. Because by this time, they're like, this guy could be anywhere. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it literally, it just goes, it's like a ping pong ball. It goes everywhere across the country.
Mm-hmm. And on September 5th, 2012, 72-year-old Sam Little was found and arrested in a homeless shelter in Kentucky. On September 25th, 2014, Sam Little was found guilty for the murders of Guadalupe Apodaca, Audrey Nelson, and Carol Elford. The judge serves him a sentence of 3 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole.
About time.
Exactly. Even though Sam is found guilty of the murders, he claims his innocence. And during his sentencing, Sam Little states that the conviction was brought on by lies and coached by liars, sanctioned me, labeled me as a serial killer without any proof, without any bodies, is legal lynching. Can you believe this guy? Like, really?
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. This is how ridiculous this guy is. So during the victim impact statements, Little would yell back at them saying that he didn't do it. And you can just, like, if you see that clip of him, because there's, like, footage out there, you can see the anger inside of him. Like, the monster was starting to come out. And it's so sad because probably that same monster that all of his victims saw right before he killed them.
Right.
So in 2018, another cop crush, Texas Ranger James Holland reaches out to Sam Little with an offer. If Sam Little confessed to one of their unsolved murders, they would waive the death penalty and extradite him to the county jail in Texas. So Sam Little agrees, and in May of 2018, James Holland visits Sam Little, and he interviews him for 7 hours.
7 hours?
7 hours. Sam Little confesses to strangling 93 victims between 1970 and 2005. And out of those 93 murders, law enforcement has been able to verify 50 confessions, with many more pending the final confirmation.
That is incredible.
Mm-hmm. 93! So once Sam Little is moved to a Texas county jail, Sam requests art supplies. And
For what?
Because he volunteers to draw each of his victims.
You're kidding.
No. And even though Sam Little is already in prison, the FBI believes it's important to seek justice for each victim to close every case possible. The FBI is asking for the public's help in matching the remaining unconfirmed confessions. The Violent Criminal Apprehension Program and the Texas Rangers have provided additional information and details about 5 cases that remain open in hopes that someone may remember a detail that could further help the investigation. And we will post that link up on our website for our listeners to see the video and confessions of those 5 cases. So I don't know if you got a chance to see them, Jose, but it's just crazy to see this, what looks like, oh, it's just a harmless old man. And then he starts confessing to these murders and you see his face. And even in some of his confessions, he's smiling. Like, it's almost like you're talking to a grandpa about, like, what his kids did, or he's remembering what his grandkids did one time. Like, it's just, it's so creepy to watch. Like,
I did see a couple of those, and you can see, yeah, it's like he's gloating about something that he's very proud of.
Oh yeah,
like that was his passion. That was right. His purpose in life.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, and even I have to confess, even as I was watching these confessions, at one point I was drawn in by his storytelling, you know. And even a part of me was like, I was listening to each one of those 5 confessions, and it was like I was hoping that it would end different. Like, I like, my brain couldn't process that this old man that's telling me the story and smiling was like, I just felt like it was gonna end different. Yeah. Each video, and I saw 5 of them.
Yeah.
And each video, I felt the same way. It's like, I finally felt what you probably felt with the weepy caller recording.
What? Creeped out?
Where I was like, and then, you know, it was just, it's like, I kind of even felt, I don't want to say bad for him, but like, I felt sorry for him,
bad,
you know?
For him?
No, not that I felt bad for him. Like I said, I just felt like the story was going to end different. And then when I saw him in court during his sentencing,
yeah,
and then you saw him yelling back at the victim's family or the...
Bet you that changed, didn't it?
Oh, no. I'm telling you, that's when I was like, are you kidding me? That's the monster that these victims saw right before they died.
Well, they saw both
You know,
sides.
It was... Because like I said, you see him and they're rolling him into the courtroom. He's in a wheelchair and he looks like this innocent old man that is like, he can't harm anybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you see his demeanor. He's just kind of like sitting there. He has these eyes of kind of like, not innocence, but like kind of like, oh, me, I'm just a poor old man, you know? And then it's like, it can switch like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like all of a sudden you were looking into the eyes of a monster, which is, like I said, probably the same face that poor Lori saw, that she probably thought, this is it. Luckily, she's a badass woman. She survived. And because of her, he's locked up in jail.
Yeah.
You know, because she was there in his sentencing. She testified against him. She said his story. And thank God that we're not in the 80s anymore. They finally listened to her. She's turned her life around. She's no longer a sex worker. You know, and it's like, it sucks that it took this long for a jury to finally listen to her and for her voice to be heard. I guess better late than never. But I mean,
nothing will ever forgive or probably change the fact that her attack initially, she was only worth 4 years.
Right.
That must have been awful for her to deal with.
Yeah. It's just, you know, and again, all because in the eyes of the law, those people don't matter, which I don't agree with. Like I said, at the end of the day, that's somebody's sister, that's somebody's niece, that's somebody's granddaughter, that's somebody's daughter. Like, it shouldn't matter what they got themselves into. You should still be seeking justice. They still have a right to report anything that happened against them. When I was doing research for this story, you know, I read that Sam Little purposely attacked sex workers and drug addicts because he knew that police wouldn't care for those murders. And it, I mean, hello, 93 and murders that he has confessed to. Like, that goes to prove, yeah, he was right. That's not okay.
And that people weren't looking for them also.
Right.
Think about the one that was inside of the factory. Down mm-hmm. the stairs weeks and weeks.
He knew that these were people that they wouldn't be missed, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Which is so sad.
It was something that I found interesting about him was he had a certain charisma to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that
that's what I'm saying. And I think that's where I got drawn to when I was looking at his confessions.
Right.
It was that charisma. It was that charming, quote unquote, because even I got drawn into it and I was like listening to his story, like waiting for it to be like, oh, psych, you know, like it's not true. I don't know.
And I'm sure that same charisma helped aid in him getting out of those murder cases
mm-hmm.
where he's citing against, you know, sex workers
mm-hmm.
against his word.
Right. He and knew how to play the system. Yeah, he knew a jury is not going to believe a sex worker over me, a stand-up guy, quote unquote.
No, even though he obviously wasn't.
But that was the persona that he would put out there for the jury, you know?
Yeah, it was a persona.
Mm-hmm. Right. There are 5 cases that are currently still open, and the FBI is looking for help, like I said, and we're going to post pictures of the drawings that he has made of each one of his victims. We'll go ahead and post the confessions. We're hoping that maybe somebody out there that's listening to this podcast, that they might have some sort of information. Again, Sam Little was all over the place. It's said that he drove one time from New Jersey to California in a matter of days. I mean, he was everywhere. So, yeah,
with his sole purpose.
Right. So if anybody, like I said, has any information linked to the Sam Little confessions, please contact the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI or submit a tip online at tips.fbi.gov.
And I'm looking at the pictures now and they are a bit disturbing. Mm-hmm. Just the matter that he drew them
mm-hmm.
and they're very almost vivid, I mm-hmm. guess. It makes you question, how could he possibly remember all these small details? Mm-hmm. And look at the necks.
Mm-hmm.
You see the necks, you see the details. You can tell he's infatuated with that.
Because he had a thing for necks. For women's nuts.
I mean, these are crimes that he committed years and years ago, mm-hmm. and he remembers them and was able to draw them.
Oh, but he can't remember the exact dates. He doesn't. He can't tell you the name of each victim.
Oh, well, I mean, I get that. My point is that it's just disturbing.
Yeah. I do want to say, obviously, there is that urge to want to close these five cases that are left to close by law enforcement, because Sam Little is now at a very fragile state. He does suffer from heart issues. And, you know, once he goes, everything's going to go with him. Police officers, nobody imagined that this guy had murdered 93 women.
Right.
So now it's, you know, they're fighting against time. They're hoping to be able to close these cases before he dies of natural causes. If you want to look at pictures and want more information on the cases we cover, you can head over to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at Podcast True Crime Weekly. I would truly love it and appreciate it if you would leave a 5-star review and subscribe onto Apple Podcasts. The only way that people find out about us is through subscribers and reviews. Thanks for listening.